book, House of the Spirits, Paola, Daughter of Fortune. Her latest book is called Ripper. She was born in Peru. Her family was in Chile, where she went back to. We will do the full interview with Isabel Allende about her work next week. But for now, this does it for Democracy Now! If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Andres Thomas-Conteras, to Clara Ibarra, and as well to Robbie Caron. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Tarina Nadura, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Stelly, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Godars, and our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Krug Meadows, Carla De Jesus, and Phil Raymond. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now, it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM, and I'm joined in the studio by my co-host for today, John Conroy. Welcome, John.
Well, thank you, Jay. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming in on Good Friday, and of course a special guest, because this, even though it's a couple days officially late, we're still all thinking about what happened on April 15th, Tax Day. So a special guest today is the spokesperson for Michigan Fair Tax, and we're going to talk about that, Linda Jolicoeur. Welcome to the Journal, Linda.
Thank you.
Yes, that's sort of a mic check just to see if it's working at all. Here, we do everything at the last minute. Before we start the show, though, I did want to thank all of our loyal listeners for calling in pledges last week during our Radiothon, our once-a-year annual pledge drive. We still have a ways to go. If you missed out on the hue and cry here from the station, we're all nonprofit, non-commercial, with no support from any governmental agency or HFCC budget. Don't call now, no, but I'm just saying you can go anytime to our website, whfr.fm, and there's a button right in the middle of the page, Radiothon 2014. You just click on that, and you can make a pledge there and even see pledge incentives. But thank you very much if you did pledge, and if it wasn't by credit card, we'll send you, of course, an envelope in the mail. Please fulfill your pledge. Maybe even add something extra, just because you know you love us. And we have unique programming here that no one else in the city has. So, to our topic of the day, which is tax issues. And primarily, we're going to talk here about the income tax, both at the federal and state level. Everybody seems to, at this time of year especially, I think if there was a poll, we would get 99% of the people saying, I hate it. I hate tax day. I hate tax time. So let's get some real-life stories here directly from Linda of the Fair Tax Group. What were your thoughts? How did you handle tax day this year?
Well, my husband and I have had to file very early the last couple of years. He is a victim of identity theft.
Oh, no.
And if you ever want to live a nightmare... Identity theft is the way to go, because you have to call the IRS, all of the credit bureaus, Homeland Security. There were several government agencies we had to let know, as well as the Internal Revenue Service, which I found very interesting.
This is an aside issue to our tax question, but it certainly makes everything more complicated, and I know it can go on for years of having struggles with this, not personally, but from other people I've known had this problem. Do you happen to know how it, where the information was gathered? Or
we
is that still a
know
question?
That they will not confirm whether they have found the person. They refused really to give my husband a whole lot of information. He happens to be a former Detroit policeman. So he was quite interested in trying to help them or assist them. And he really ran into a brick wall. They didn't really want his help. They said they knew what they were doing and just to file our returns very early so that someone could not take our refund if we had one coming.
So understanding your special circumstance, about how long, how many hours did it take you to get your documents together? Did you use another tax advisor person? And we talked before the show, you have some accounting background yourself.
Yes. We have never done our own taxes. I think they are far too complicated for the average individual. And I have a college degree. I've worked in finance for 40 years, and I don't understand it. And I consider myself fairly intelligent. I'm disappointed that we have not gone for a reform of the tax system already in this country, but people are too apathetic, I think, about it.
Well, and even though people complain a lot either before and shortly after tax day, not much happens. And we're going to talk later in depth about why we think that's true. But John, tell me your personal story. How much time did it take for filing? You and I are both in the category of senior type people.
Certainly, Jay. I had one other question for Linda as well. Is how long did it take before you were cleared as far as the identity theft was concerned?
We're not.
Oh, you're still not.
We're still not. It's been 3 years.
3 years.
This is the third tax filing. And how we found out was that our accountant went to file our taxes electronically, and the system would not accept it. And so she said, I don't know what else to do. I tried calling them, and they won't speak to me. They said, you have to call them. So we called and determined it was my husband's identity that had been stolen, not mine. And it's very ironic because he has no charge cards.
Wow.
He really has not had a loan in so many years. I personally think it's an inside job. I think it's somebody at the IRS who noticed that he didn't have a lot of ways that he would realize that his identity was stolen.
There's a fictionalized show that we've borrowed the theme song from for this show, the Bones program.
Oh, yes.
It's on CBS.
Yes.
That's actually their theme, because one of our many mottos here at the WHFR Journal is dig deeper into local news, into local events, because we really think that local things matter the most and it can influence you the most, and you can have the greatest effect on the local issues compared to the federal issues, certainly, because fewer people to talk to, you have more personal influence and so on. But they and of course it's all a fictionalized stories about solving crimes and in forensic science, going after the bones and looking closely at scratches. And it's a pretty successful show. I've met David Boreanaz a couple times at different conferences, and I just love the show. Anyway, the point is that they, for the last almost 2 years now, the head of the Jeffersonian, which is this so-called fictional national investigative agency under the FBI of scientists, this woman has had her identity stolen, and she said it's going to go on for another 2 years. She's living on almost nothing, that somehow there's a deal, they give her minimum, and she supposedly in this position is making hundreds of thousands of dollars as the head of this institute, and she's reduced to almost abject poverty while it all gets worked out, and she's got lawyer help and so on, and so it is devastating. So only use the internet to go to whfr.fm. Ours is definitely secure. Okay,
secure,
definitely.
Right.
Okay, now back to the question. So, John, how many hours did it take you, and did you file it totally yourself with pencil and paper, or?
I gathered my little income stream documents that I have, which is pretty much my pension and my Social Security, and handed it to a local tax attorney. I didn't have many charitable contributions. I didn't have, my only concern was a percentage of withholding. What mm-hmm. could I do to better that so that I wouldn't owe the federal government so much money?
That's right.
And but it was really pretty quick. It was more complicated when I had a when I was dealing with a 401k, when I had some investments I was mm-hmm. thinking about.
Of course.
We also file separately but married. For easier purposes, but mostly the thing of receipts is the problem.
Yeah, that's an ongoing issue. And as I said, I have a big box. I throw mine in and try to keep it organized monthly. But still, I have to go through them all. And because I do make some charitable contributions, I'm proud of that. I contribute to Henry Ford Community College myself, even though I work here too, because I think it's a great place. Other nonprofits I support. You need to keep those receipts and then gather them up. And then you need to, in my case, I use TurboTax, so to my story, which is the most popular one. But it costs $50, $60 that maybe less than a tax person would charge. Sometimes they charge based on how complicated your situation is, how many hours they have to put in. But I'd rather do it myself, and I haven't had any problems with that. But okay, here's my bottom line, the jumping off point for some of our other discussions here about is this the way it has to be? Because of all the things that are bad and difficult about the income tax system we have, both nationally and in the state of Michigan, too. Why, and Linda, you brought this up, why is a person with two master's degrees myself unable to do it myself easily? Why do I have to even pay for that program? How many hours did I put in that I could have spent more productively or maybe with less stress? It's really the stress that kills me at this time. I feel like a criminal when I'm having to just simply put in the exemptions I'm legally able to put in for, you know, and of course, if I don't, I'm definitely a criminal of some sort because they'll come to get me or garnishing my wages eventually or something. Yes, I know they put on, in fact, several messages went out. You know, you don't have to file on the 15th. You just have to put in an extension request. Yeah, but that's an extension request in which you have to upfront guess at what you owe and then pay what you owe to them.
You're still paying, that's right.
And then if you're off by more than a few percent, they're going to come and get you later. And so in a way, you've got to calculate almost the whole thing anyway. Mm-hmm. To get an extension. That is so crazy. It'll make people think, oh, just file that and, you know, just sort of guess at what you owe or that they owe you $10,000. That's crazy. They're going to come to get you later if that's way off or just, so that's not, I mean, they're not literally, well, sometimes literally the IRS has been known to physically send a team out to grab people and grab things in your house and your car. So, I mean, it's not, and they're way above the law, folks. They talk about Homeland Security or NSA or something. The IRS has absolute ultimate power to come and grab stuff from you if they even think you're guilty of holding something back. And it's that's an amazing police state story that we'll put aside for the time being. So I think that the tax system has to be easy enough to do that the average person has no problem with compliance. And it doesn't cost them any extra money either. That's what I think the tax system should be. I think we need to pay taxes for government services. People disagree with what those services, those minimum or maximum services should be and what they go for. But I think we all need to pay our share. So what's wrong with the income tax we have now, both federal and national? Number one is we don't get all the money. It's withholding. We don't get all the money we deserve. And if we got it up front, we could, if we were smart, save it somewhere or invest it and maybe, not necessarily, make some money on it. But the government takes it up front, and so therefore we don't have that option, and maybe they're making money on it, but probably not. Not much. They're probably so in debt that it's not really making any money on it. They're not really investing it and they're certainly not investing that for us. So the withholding hurts because for most people who are making middle class or above, they're going to take out probably somewhere about 30% or so. I know in my taxes, when I was fully employed here as a college professor, they took out 30, 32%. And I think after deductions, I might have owed 20-22% or something since I itemized, you know, home mortgage and other things like that. But that was money that I didn't, that I couldn't get back. Now, John is absolutely right that if you're getting a lot of money back each year, then you should ask your tax person to, and even TurboTax has a form you can print out to do this, to change your withholding. Okay, and so that it sort of break even, or even maybe you got to pay the government an extra couple hundred bucks of tax time. That's a solution for that. But I don't like the fact that I don't get all the money up front, and that's the problem with withholding. And isn't that a problem for businesses? And the collecting it, Linda?
Well, yes. I actually have been a tax reformer, you might say, since the late 80s, when I discovered after going into business that I was now a collection agency for the state of Michigan. And that's what led me down this path of tax reform, was the fact that at one time I was in the leasing business and I had a company that bought equipment for other people and then they paid me back on a monthly basis. And at the end of the contract, they owned it either for a nominal purchase price or they owned it outright. The state required me to collect the from each company that I lent money to sales or use tax and personal property taxes, which went to the local units of government, of which they then, because the person was financing the equipment through us, were charged a sales tax on their property tax. And I could not imagine that this was something that our government intended, that our legislatures would have consciously thought about taxing a tax. So I brought it to the attention of some business groups and pulled together about 40 leasing and finance companies from across the state of Michigan, and we petitioned the state, as is our right, as citizens, and we actually got some relief through laws that were passed to reform and remove the sales tax from the property tax so that business owners did not pay a tax on a tax. And we got relief in that we no longer had to collect the tax, we just had to report it.
But still, there's in a even average size business, there's people that are working on tax issues all the time. I mean,
well,
it's not just once a year, unless you're a very small business and your operators keep a lot of records themselves. They're like pseudo tax people each month. But basically, everybody needs, because of the tax system we have, every business needs tax people full time.
Absolutely. I mean, when I say I'm a small business, I was a small business owner. I was a micro business owner. The most people we ever had work for us was 12.
Okay.
So I'm talking about a very small business, and we worked on taxes every single day. And we had to go out and invest in software so that we could keep this up. I had to have a full-time person that dealt with nothing more than paying, collecting, reporting taxes. Mm-hmm. And it's a great intrusion on businesses. Businesses are forced to do things that it is no reward at all to shareholders.
And right, and those costs are passed along, they have to be passed along, the cost of doing business to the people that are buying your goods or services.
To the customers, which brings up a great topic, which I am livid when I see on Facebook or I hear it on the news or I hear people talking about it on the radio that businesses don't pay their fair share or they didn't pay what they should have paid. And GE is always a great object of people's wrath because they are known for having so many offshore accounts and tax shelters out of the country. Well, that the reason they do that is that GM is made up of stockholders, of which the board of directors has an obligation to return a profit on those investments. And a corporation is not a person. They shouldn't be paying taxes because any tax that they pay is ultimately paid by you and I. If I buy a GE profile refrigerator, the cost of that tax is built into that product.
We're speaking with Linda Jolicoeur, who is the spokesperson for the whole state of Michigan. She's a spokesperson for the group called Michigan Fair Tax, advocating a change in our tax system in Michigan, and we'll explain that in detail. But she's here with us, and it's time to mention, as we do once every hour, is that when we do this show, is that all the opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Okay, that's. But we thank them very much for allowing us our freedom of speech here on this show. It is ironic, just the point you brought up, and then we'll come back to this, of course, that you say corporations aren't people, but the Supreme Court ruling in regard to campaign contributions indicated, and Mitt Romney was fond of saying frequently, corporations are people too. And of course, that can be used against him, because if they are, then they got to pay exactly that 30% tax of that the rest of us have to pay. But you're right that the tax avoidance schemes and the exemptions and the bills that ask for a little incentive or a little giveaway here are part of the problem. I'm looking for it in the multiple pages. I really do, folks, have many pages here with me of research on this topic, as well as three books that I've read, but I'm not going to spin their pages for you. And the fact is that even the gentleman who is the operational head of the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, sometimes misspoken as the Infernal Revenue Service, he says, this is crazy, this whole tax system. And he's the head of the IRS. And he said, there's got to be reforms. There's something like 67,000 pages, probably more now since the last time anybody tried to count them, of tax rules. Most tax preparers and accountants have never read all of those. Some they're not even aware of. Now, some are very specifically just for one business in one state during one period of time, with a certain kind of product or something, and those have been passed by our Congress because they were influenced. They want to do something nice, maybe, or get more campaign contributions from people in their local areas. But it's crazy now, and even the head of the IRS says, we can't enforce these, we can't, there's no semblance of fairness here. We need something else. So if the head of the IRS, whose job depends on the IRS, is saying what we have is de facto, I think he's saying, mostly unfair. It's an unfair system because of all the crazy different exemptions, exceptions, deductions. And as you mentioned, some of the larger companies have found ways, and it's all legal, theoretically, but they found ways to go offshore, that is, incorporate in another country or whatever, where they have a lower tax structure, to effectively to the U.S. pay nothing or get money back from the U.S. The biggest companies, most successful, you mentioned GM and GE, they're getting money back from our government rather than paying anything. Now, of course, if you gave them too much in withholding, then right, you might expect something back after your tax was calculated. But it's in, oh, I remember the other big industry is oil. Oil companies in America are making, well, Mobil and all the others, Exxon, whatever, Exxon is Mobil, that, yeah, it's a vital resource. We run the country because we have gas and diesel fuel, you know, flowing. But in fact, those corporations are making some of the largest profits. This is proven, folks. And yet we're still giving them incentives and exemptions. And they're still, in many cases, paying almost no tax. So the corporations are people too argument, just to finish this, and we'll backtrack here, is so wrong in so many other ways. It is wrong in this way, in terms of the taxation issue. Maybe in campaign contributions or freedom of speech, we can debate that later. Supreme Court has ruled on that, although a lot of people are trying to reverse that. Linda?
Well, I'm not defending oil companies, and I don't own any stock in an oil company that I'm aware of, but I do want to say that the average profit for the oil industry is 8 cents.
8 cents.
8 cents.
Of a dollar?
Of a dollar.
Okay.
Do you know what the federal government's take on that dollar is?
Tell us.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to pause to give you a chance. It's somewhere in the area of 30 cents. So when the government is making the 8 cents the oil companies are making,
yeah,
I'll think that they have a fair argument. But the reality is this. Our corporations have a approximately a 22% built-in tax that other countries do not have to pay. In other words, because we tax every step of the process, by the time you buy a product or a service, it's 22% higher in cost than it would be in any other country in the world. One of the reasons, besides the fact that I was born and raised on Ford Motor Company, because that's how I ate. My father worked at Ford, so I would never buy a foreign car for that reason. I don't believe in biting the hand that feeds you. But the other reason is because these other countries untax the car when it leaves their shores. It's not that way for our cars. When our cars go to their country, our manufacturers still have to pay the taxes, and they get taxed again when that car arrives in the foreign country. They get a tariff, correct.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, this is a subject that a lot of people think, oh, well, it's a Republican thing. No, it's not a Republican thing. It is a Democrat and a Republican thing because taxes fall on everyone.
Okay, we're going to take a break from our talk here, but here is something to listen to. This is Jim Hightower, and he's talking about just what we just mentioned, so it's a good segue, as they say in radio, a good transition here, about corporations and their tax burden. You may not agree, he's a progressive, but we want to come back and we'll actually start detailing what is the fair tax proposals, both nationally and specifically state, because I think you'd be quite amazed. And we'll have to bring up the so-called flat tax because there's a couple of people in Congress that think that's the way to go as a reform. So complete reform here, folks. Boy, you want to stay tuned for this. But here's Jim Hightower's comment, and we'll be back. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Did you scramble to get your taxes done this year, dashing to the mailbox at the last minute? Yeah, me too. I really don't mind paying what I owe, but I hate having to pay the taxes owed by the likes of J.P. Morgan Chase, Mitt Romney, Exxon, and Amazon. They're just a few of the astonishingly profitable corporations and super-rich financial hucksters who walk their tax tabs each year, thus putting the cost of everything from the military to our national parks onto our shoulders. We constantly hear CEOs and their congressional hirelings wail about the punishing tax rate of 35% assessed on corporate profits. But they're grinning as they're crying, for they know they actually pay nowhere near that. In fact, the latest assessment by the Government Accountability Office found that U.S. corporations pay an average tax rate of only 12.6%, forcing workaday taxpayers to cover the multiple billions of dollars that these privileged elites dodge. How do they do that? Simple. They duck through ridiculous loopholes in our tax laws. How ridiculous? Try the subsidy for corporate criminals. If you get a speeding ticket, do you get to deduct the fine from the income tax you owe? Ha, just try it. But J.P. Morgan Chase was fined more than $20 billion last year for major frauds and consumer ripoffs, and his honchos have now deducted that punishment from the corporate tax bill, claiming it as a cost of doing business. Oh, they also get to deduct the many millions of dollars they paid lawyers to defend their blatant wrongdoing. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, sniff the elites, we're merely making rightful use of the deductions allowed by tax laws. But it's their lawyers who wrote those laws to legalize their thievery. And need I mention that they also get a deduction for the mega salaries and expenses of those lawyers? So we pay for their wrongdoings, their fines, and their lawyers.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Well, we're back live on the WHFR Journal. This is Friday, April the 18th, 2014. And our special guest in the studio, along with John Conroy and myself, is Linda Jolicoeur from the Michigan Fair Tax Group. They are lobbying for a change in our tax system in Michigan. And we're going to detail that, of course, but we're going to talk right now about one of the other two major proposals in the U.S. Congress that actually have bills assigned to them and numbers. And for whatever reasons, and I think it's totally wrong, it's primarily Republicans that are talking about it. Some people identified as Tea Partiers or libertarians, and some of them are supporting what's called the flat tax, and the others are supporting the fair tax. So, Linda, even though you're supporting fair tax, you may be the best one in the room to give us a quick brief introduction to what is a flat tax and how would it change what we have now with the income tax system.
Well, basically, the flat tax is the same tax we have right now with the internal revenue and the income tax. It still taxes income. The difference is there aren't the multi-layers of deductions. There aren't the multi-layers of tax rates. The flat tax would bring it down to two basic rates. I believe it's 29 and 39 or 25 and 39%. It's actually the same thing as what's President Ronald Reagan did in the 80s. He flattened out the tax system, thought that it would stay that way, and then we had a tremendous 10, 12 years of growth from those reductions in tax rates. And I'm not saying that it's not a way to encourage investment, but it doesn't work because, unfortunately, as a new president comes in, they raise the taxes, as Bill Clinton did when he went into office, and then the Republicans took over Congress, and he was forced to step back a little and bring the tax rates back down again. And then George Bush came in and renewed the tax rates and kept them fairly low. And then, of course, as most of you know, President Barack Obama has introduced more than 440 tax increases since he took office 6 years ago. Thankfully, not all of them passed, but the biggest one did pass, and that is what we call Obamacare, which is the Affordable Care Act, has 44 new taxes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as most countries know, and I'm not speaking pro or con, but just for a slight bit of balance here, if they have universal single payer, then the government is in control of the healthcare system primarily, and their taxes are much higher in those countries overall because they're paying for that, medical care up front. But that's a topic of another show. In other words, I'm totally in favor of paying for services that I want. But just as an example, as a pacifist, I'm totally against funding wars, especially wars on countries I've never heard of that I don't think the U.S. has anything to do with. I don't want to fund our nuclear arsenal, which is greater than everybody else. So everybody has their own preferences and which ways to go on those issues. But to go back to the so-called flat tax proposal, which, I think some people aren't thinking this through. Number one, you still need withholding, don't you?
No.
Oh, you don't need withholding.
Absolutely not. You would with a flat tax.
You
really,
that's right, yes,
would not have much of a change from the system that
right,
we have now,
right,
except that they would eliminate some of the deductions
right,
that you have, the largest of that being the mortgage deduction, which mm-hmm, you hear a lot of outcry about, and yet only 20% of the population take that deduction.
And theoretically, it would be simple enough that on tax day, it would just be like a postcard. It would be, okay, I'll pay this amount or that amount, I mean, depending on your income level, but there's like only two choices. So it would be extremely simple on tax day with the fair tax. No.
With the fair tax, yes.
With the
not
fair
with
tax.
The flat
no,
tax.
With the fair tax, there's no tax day. But we'll get to that. But
correct.
So the flat tax is basically what we have now. It may be slightly less complicated when that tax day comes up, April 15th each year. But nonetheless, it doesn't keep away, I see one disadvantage, the politicians from changing things, as you mentioned, up or down. Just pass a little bill here, and all of a sudden it's more or less, or you add more costs. So I don't think a flat tax, and there's been some great supposedly business leaders, usually Republicans, who have said, oh, that's the way to go, flat tax. But one gentleman of, Steve Forbes of Forbes magazine,
right,
he was all for that. He wrote a book about it. You know, Steve, I know why people didn't support you for president. This is crazy if you look at some of the details. Now, the fair tax proposal as background here, let's move to that now, halfway through the hour, since that's why Linda's here. And John is desperate to find out about this, has been actually researched by academics, people better than myself for 20 or 30 years. This is not something that is has been thought of twice. Now, if you go on even Amazon.com, just for example, and you look for books on fair tax, the fair tax, okay, proposal, there's a couple books that are so negative. I mean, they say it's a fraud, it'll never work. And if you read the reviewers, this guy is out of his mind. He hasn't read what fair tax really is. And I've seen some of those. I have to say that the arguments against it, if anybody even tries to make an argument, usually people don't even talk about fair tax, pro or con, but those that are against it, they don't really understand it, and that is a shame. So let's see if we can make it relatively simple here, the basics, for our listeners. And I don't know if we should start at the federal level or the state level, but it's simple enough at both levels. Let's just try to combine those, Linda, and I'll fill in.
Okay.
Because I've read the three books there that John is thumbing through.
The simplest way to break it down for people is the difference between flat tax and a fair tax is that the flat tax is basically the system that you have, does not eliminate the IRS, does not eliminate the 72,000 pages of IRS code. You still have to report. The fair tax completely repeals the 16th Amendment, which established the law which allowed the IRS to be created in the first place. Mm-hmm. Our founding fathers never intended for our incomes to be taxed. Our incomes are investments. They started the revolution over a 3-cent tax on tea, because back then the things you bought were taxed, not the income that you earned. And so the whole revolution was based on the fact that an individual, that's why we're a constitutionally limited republic, not a democracy, because the individual had the right to retain his or her property. That's what caused the American Revolution. And it wasn't until 1913 that Congress, after 4 failed attempts, was finally able to get the 16th Amendment passed. And they used the excuse of paying for the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as we know, the tax has just increased and increased and increased to the latest studies show that many people are paying over 50% of their wages, of what they earn, in some form of taxes, whether it's income tax, sales tax, sin taxes, property taxes. The list goes on and on and on.
Yes, and I mean, even taxes on sales of, I don't know, alcohol and cigarettes.
Those are sin taxes.
Right, but those would continue. The fair tax or even the flat tax, they don't have to do with that. They just replace the income tax, right?
No.
Okay.
It completely rips out the entire IRS system. In other words, the 16th Amendment would be repealed. Therefore, the whole tax code would be repealed, and you would be charged a national sales tax on your consumption. So people who spend more would pay more. People who spend less would pay less.
Right.
So I think that goes to the argument. There's so much talk right now about people paying their fair share. Well, what is fair share?
Right. There's two. Well, John's got a point, but I'll make mine first because I got my microphone here and I can turn his off. No, but to be fair about the American Revolution, maybe it's 3 points. The American Revolution, I thought, was no taxation without representation, because England was doing it and they had no say in it. I think a lot of people still feel that today, that, hey, where's my representative? I mean, I'm not in favor of this, and they're still supporting it. But getting into the present, though, the fair tax, it's true, it does away with withholding and therefore the IRS. And it replaces it with what's called, in some cases, a consumption tax or a sales tax on everything. Okay, and we'll talk about proposed rates in a second, but think about that. No withholding from your checks.
No.
Okay, because there's no tax day. Okay, it's what you buy, you pay an extra amount, and it goes to, in the federal government we've been talking about, or the state government for their services. And it could be if there was a fair tax in Michigan and a fair tax nationally, there'd be one tax and the other tax that you'd pay, but it's on consumption. So those people that buy more, pay more. And some people say, oh, but I'm paying on food and life's necessities. That'll really hurt the poor people. And the fair tax meets that question. And why don't you explain the way around that?
Well, the way we get around that is that we created what's called the prebate.
Yeah.
And the prebate is based on sort of the earned income credit that taxpayers get right now. If you're low income, you get up to the poverty level, you get your taxes back. Well, the fair tax would give back everyone's taxes up to the national poverty level. So depending on how many are in your household, you would file, all you would have to do is file how many people are in your household, their Social Security numbers, and for every Social Security number, you would get the prebate for that number of people.
And you can get Social Security numbers even for newborn children, too. So it's
You have to get
when
your children are
so,
born.
Yeah, and so this is a rebate, but you don't have to wait for it, folks. This is a prebate check. And yes, I know it sounds crazy, but it goes to everybody. Extra amount you pay is on everything you consume, then, okay, this same amount goes back to everybody monthly, I think.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can figure that out, fairtax.org or mifairtax.org for the Michigan version. They have ways that you can compute that. It does depend on the percentage of cost for life's necessities at different economic levels. But in the so-called lower level, poverty level, that's where the computation is done. And everybody gets those checks. Yes, even the rich people.
Yes. Yes.
Why?
Because many states do not pay a federal tax on medical care, medical products, food products. And just like in the state of Michigan, not to confuse the two, but in Michigan, we do not pay taxes on food and on medical care, medicine.
No sales tax on that.
So this money would actually be giving you back the money that you would be taxed on, but it's going to give it back to you prior to your spending it. So in other words, you're not going to be out of pocket for it. You're going to get that prebate before you actually spend for the prescriptions or the food.
I have a couple things running through my mind, but when you brought up Medicare and the fact that when you buy a medical care product, you don't pay the tax. There's no additional tax in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
But the price of that product is still, to me, a little bit is strong, is high. And even with the help of Medicare, you are still paying a tremendous price for these medical products. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Agreed. No. Well, no, I think you bring up a good point. There's many elderly people who are on a very limited fixed income, and so the prebate would give them money in advance to buy their medicines, help pay for their medical treatments. That is part of why we came up with the prebate, is if one person has a poverty level, shouldn't every American have a poverty level?
And there's no withholding. So your pension checks wouldn't have any withholding for the federal government or the state government if it was in the state. You know, the number one thing up front that I've heard from some fairly smart people locally is they said, well, yeah, but that's not a good way to run a government, because sometimes people buy more things and sometimes they buy less. And so it's not a steady flow of money coming in. And that is not true.
Actually, economists have proven, and by the way, there have been over 80 economists and academics that have studied the fair tax both on a national and state level. And just as an aside, the most successful states in the country right now are states without an income tax. They're the fastest growing, they have the highest job creation, and they have the lowest rate of taxation. And that's why you have so many people migrating to these states, these magnet states that have no state income tax. Because think about it, if you are a person of means, or even if you're not a person of means, you start to think about, well, if I have to live on a fixed income, do I want to be in a state that's going to tax me on my income? Yeah. As an elderly person, you're not going to spend as much as somebody who's raising a family. That's why the prebate gives you more if you're a family of four than if you're a couple of two, you know, retired people.
And that was a point that I was thinking about before, is you have to have money to spend money. If these folks who have less income, they're not able to get to those levels of spending to will they get to those levels so that they will be in good shape as far as tax goes?
For people like Jim Hightower, who and myself in many ways, who think that a progressive or a graduated income tax is a good idea. Supposedly people who do make an awful lot of money, they don't need as much for basics, so they're spending more on, let's say, personal choice luxuries, luxuries to many of us, essentials for them perhaps. Nonetheless, if you're in favor of those that have more money and are spending more money, paying more money towards government services, maybe they're even using more government services because of their lifestyles too, then the fair tax is actually takes care of that, because those purchases, which are more made by people that have more discretionary funds,
that's what I was thinking of, discretionary.
Are right. They're going to pay more. So if you love progressive or graduated taxation, now in Michigan, the income tax by constitution can't be progressive or graduated. It has to be the same rate for everybody. Of course, there's deductions and so on. You mentioned the earned income tax credit, which has been reduced in Michigan, but it's still there a little bit. So this is the fair tax we're talking about, folks. So no IRS. No withholding. And John, this is the point that you were making too, that not only you don't have to pay taxes, there's no withholding for your pensions up front, so you have all that extra money. So many people, you know, they pay the withholding, they, because it always happens, it's happened for decades and decades that there was withholding, you don't miss it, but you don't realize what you're really being paid. Maybe you look at your W-4, what your, you know, gross pay was, but you never see that, so you don't even think about that. Well, what do I actually get every week or every month in my paycheck? When if you actually see your pay increased by, say, 30%, whoa, you know, I don't think you'd mind paying an additional amount in this consumption tax. And the point we made earlier, which debunks a lot of people that quickly think about it, well, that's not a stable way to fund a government. It is. It's more stable than property taxes. We know that for sure in Michigan.
Absolutely.
You know, after the decline in property value in Detroit and the surrounding area, my house went down 50-60%. Sure, I didn't have to pay as much in tax, but I couldn't resell it for anything either. A lot of people found that they still owed more than what they could sell it for, so they were stuck.
Yeah.
So that's not a good situation either. So property tax is not a stable way to fund a state. What about buying lottery tickets? No, that never raises enough money. No. And I think, unfortunately, the smart people who know that the odds are against them don't buy the tickets.
No.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's a gamble, right? And yeah, I know somebody has to win. My dad used to say that, but he never won. So, you know, that's an issue. So, okay. So the idea, I think, of a fair tax is absolutely appropriate, with one exception, and hopefully we won't end on this, because I know you can, Linda Jolicoeur from Michigan Fair Tax is here, but we talked about this earlier. Corporations are people too, but in the fair tax situation, there's no business taxes.
Correct.
They don't have to pay a tax on their profits. None. How can that be fair?
Because right now you're paying 22% higher cost for any product or service that you buy in this country. And because corporations and businesses really do not pay taxes, all they do is they pass them on to you and I through the cost of their product or their service, whatever it is that they're selling, whether they sell a service or they sell a product, they have to calculate that tax cost into what they charge you for the product. So who's really paying the tax? The corporation may be cutting the check, but you're paying the tax, you and I, every individual.
Plus, we've already said, in a tax system like we have now, they can find ways to get exemptions passed or go offshore or something so that they don't even have to pay that. But if they do pay their fair shares, they're certainly got to make it up in order to stay in business. They have to make it up by putting it into their costs.
Correct.
Now, there is a fair tax also has an exemption. Not only do businesses, big and little, not have to pay on their income, on their profits under Michigan fair tax, they don't have to pay on business-to-business transactions. So give me an example or two of what a business-to-business transaction would be. In other words, anyone else going to, like, Staples, office supplies, to buy paper and pencils, they're going to pay the tax, and whether it's the federal or the Michigan fair tax. But a business that, say, needs paper and pencil for their offices, they wouldn't pay?
Well, it would be very much like the industrial processing tax exemption that we have in the state of Michigan. If you're a manufacturer and you're buying a piece of equipment to manufacture the parts that you sell to a tier one supplier or one of the big three, you don't pay tax on that equipment that you purchase. It's the same concept. Right now, people pay tax on every step of the process. So it's a cumulative tax. That's why they say that the product, and I'm not, when I say they, I'm talking about economists, not me. I'm not that smart. I couldn't figure that out. But the economists say that because we are taxed on each step of the process, our products and goods are more costly than in other countries.
Mm-hmm. I did look this up on fairtax.org because I was concerned. I said, okay, well, I bet, you know, right now I know the big businesses, they provide, in some cases, houses and cars and planes for their executives, usually not for their online workers, but they do business with these things. They have parties at their houses that are for the good of the company, let's say, and so there's kind of an excuse there. Or they need cars to drive around to meetings or things like that. Now, that's already happening, but it's interesting that the fair tax has a provision at the national level anyway to prevent this. So there might not be an IRS, but there still has to be some sort of government overwatch about these exemptions, because it says here, and this is a direct quote, folks, from their website, although the fair tax does not prohibit businesses from providing taxable property or services such as gifts, prizes, rewards, or remuneration for employment, the gift, reward, and so forth is considered to be the conversion of property or services from business use to personal use and is therefore taxable. Likewise, there is a similar provision to prevent abuse of employee discounts. So, under the fair tax, employer-provided employee discounts over 20% are taxable. So, there has to be a little oversight here. You're not doing away with, like, IRS-type policing completely, because I discovered after 4 or 5 years of talking about this that might be a loophole, that their people might set up their family as a sort of a mini fake corporation and deduct their house or their car as a business expense, when in fact it would finally catch up to them because they're not meeting any criteria of being a real business.
I suppose there's two points that in what you're saying. One, you can't completely eliminate the IRS because you're still going to need some auditing. The tax would be collected at the retail site. So you go and purchase a boat. The boat seller would collect the tax on the boat,
make sure that
remit
they send
it to the
in
state.
Appropriately, yeah.
So the states would be, the IRS, instead of auditing individuals, would now be auditing the states to make sure they're getting their federal share of the tax. So that was the first
but
point.
It's nothing like the IRS organization we have now. I mean,
no,
the government would save billions of dollars.
Down, yes.
Billions of dollars from compliance. There'd
that,
be
yeah.
There would be no more tax returns. There'd be no more personal reporting. Probably could eliminate
80%. Think of all the trees you'd save. You
know. Right. One great advantage that just, we only have 6 minutes left, amazing.
Wow.
But one great advantage, too, is that people who who are, let's say, in the country illegally, or who have, jobs or services they don't really report for. Let's say they clean homes for people in the neighborhood, or they rake leaves, and they get paid $5 or $10. Okay, they don't pay tax on that because it's not reported, and then they say it's relatively minor. But the that amount of transaction is actually huge nationwide, and so everyone, whether they're legal or illegal, is paying because they have to buy stuff. They have to buy the things that they need, so they are, everybody has to pay that tax. So it sort of catches all of the under-the-table transactions, all the tax avoiders, whether it's legal or illegal or accidental, it catches them when they have to buy their stuff.
It's one of the beauties of the plan, and, you know, on a personal level, it always ticked me off when people would come to me and say, oh, well, I'm in a cash business. I can do this. I can do that. I was in a lending business. Everything I do is on paper. There is no hiding income, no hiding outflow of money. I mean, everything is in writing when you're in the type of business I was in. And people would come to me that were in a cash business and say, oh, well, I don't pay tax on that. I don't pay tax. And I'd look at them like, what do you mean you don't pay tax on that? So it isn't just illegals or people who are engaged in illegal activity. It's legitimate businesses as well that are not paying everything they should be paying. And I'm the last person in the world who would accuse people of not being totally honest, but we know that they exist. We know that that's out there.
And this would collect, again, huge amount of money for our government. I mean, again, the savings on not having the IRS or not in the way we have it now, and catching all of the transactions, even from people who don't, who have businesses that don't report, is an amazing benefit. Now, I want to spend the last few minutes talking about the action step. How can people make a change if they're in favor of this? It's very hard to make changes in major systems in this country, whether it's political contribution systems or taxation systems, even though at this time of year, almost everybody, are we a democracy? No, we're representative democracy, though, and I think we want to tell our representatives we want something else. We want something that's either more fair, more efficient. But let me see if I can figure out. There was one more comment. Maybe I've forgotten it now before we get into the action step. Any other advantage, Linda? I mean, about fair tax national. Oh, I know what it is. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt you here. Somebody's probably listening and say, well, how much tax is that going to be? What is this national sales tax, that again, that replaces all income tax, okay, and puts all this fairness in place, okay, and gives you no withholding and no taxation you have to do? Well, I think it's about 22 or 23%. That's what this fair tax would be instead of all that other ways of paying. So it's a consumption tax for everyone on everything, but that's at the national level. Now, shifting to the state level, if we don't have the state income tax and we don't have to pay withholding to the state, I think, from what I've read recently, our sales tax now is 6%, but it would change to just a few points more, like to 9.75 or something like that, 9.5 I've seen estimated, if it was a Michigan state fair tax. Is that about right?
It would be somewhere between 8% and 9%. That's what we've estimated.
Okay.
On a national level, it probably is going to have to be somewhere between 17 and 19 cents.
Okay.
But again, because we don't know how much revenue will be collected on people who are currently not paying anything.
Mm-hmm.
So when you eliminate the withholding, you eliminate gift tax, estate taxes. This also eliminates the Medicare and Social Security tax that you're paying on your pay right now as
right,
well. So
be,
really,
you get
all
the money
payroll
from
taxes,
source.
Not just mm-hmm. withholding,
right.
Because this rate that we've calculated would eliminate all other taxes. And I do want to emphasize one other thing. The tax is only on the purchase of new goods.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
yes.
If you were to buy a used car or you bought used furniture or a used boat, there would be no tax.
Right.
It's
first time purchase, in other words.
One right. time, yeah. yes.
Just for the new, it has to be brand new.
Yeah. On a new piece of whatever.
Right. So if you want to save a little money, as a lot of people in lower income levels want to do, you'd actually talk about recycling. It gives you an incentive to buy something that is still basically good. Some people say, too, but well, then prices will jump so high. There is a chance, and of course it depends on whether or not you really believe that the free market is effective. In some industries, there's only two or three dominant industries, so I'm not sure. But businesses, if they don't have to pay these extra taxes in the process of making things, they could theoretically lower their prices.
Absolutely.
To be competitive. And so, as soon as one business starts doing that, saying, well, you know, we can keep a huge margin, we'll just lower prices, and that'll undercut the other one. Unless they have some sort of illegal agreement among them, so, well, we dominate the market, we're not going to cut prices at all. It's happened.
That would be price fixing.
Yes, I know.
And that's illegal.
It is illegal, and that's why you need some enforcement on that, too. Especially when there's only like two or three companies, sort of like oligarchies, in any business area, and there's not a lot of other upcoming competition. It's like the car industry can generally, as they did with the Tucker automobiles in 1950s, great cars, real challenge to Detroit, and they colluded among themselves to make suppliers not deliver parts to them, and really forced them out of business because of their power controlling so much of the industry and the supporting industries. And that's not good democracy. That's not good free market, first of all.
But
I'm just saying that there is a chance. This is an advantage, you will point out, that maybe the prices, once this gets going, would come down so that that extra amount, whether it's the federal amount of 17 to 20 or whatever added percent, or in the state of Michigan, prices could come down because businesses, if they want to be competitive, could certainly afford to do that.
It is estimated that prices will come down because that 22% of artificial tax that is now inflating the cost of products should come down. It should come out of that product. And it, as you said, it only takes one business to say, well, I'm going to make less profit and get a bigger share of the market. And then you've created the competition that brings prices lower.
Okay, it's WHFR Dearborn. It's 2 o'clock as we wait for our blues DJ to get here. We still have about maybe 1 minute or 2 minutes on our podcast for the people that listen to the archive. To make it happen with the federal government, we need an amendment to the Constitution, one to repeal the 16th Amendment, right?
H.R. 25 and SB 122 would actually repeal the 16th Amendment, and the fair tax would not go into effect until the 16th Amendment was repealed.
Mm-hmm. But that's going to be more difficult than actually putting a Michigan fair tax into place, isn't it? Now, Michigan fair tax does require a vote of the people, or can it be done by the legislature?
No, because we're talking about a sales tax here. It's in our Constitution in the state of Michigan. It would have to go to the people. The people would have to bring it about. But I believe that that's the only way that we will bring it around nationally. The lobbyists are so entrenched in D.C. that you'll never get your congressperson, whether they're male or female, to go along with the fair tax because it eliminates all the lobbying. If there's nothing to lobby for in terms of tax favors,
You don't need them. One final thing, since Joanna's here and she's getting ready to do the blues, we're just finishing our tax day blues story here, is that I know there's actually some national associations of accountants that are in favor of the fair tax. And if I can sum up, it's because they can